Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. With Apple's long rumoured foldable iPhone now looking closer than ever, we thought it was the perfect excuse to dive back into the Gadget Show archives again to see where it all began for Apple's iPhone.
So this week we're revisiting some of our biggest iPhone moments over the years, from the launch of the very first iPhone, their biggest missteps, and some of the bold predictions we made along the way.
But before we get into the podcast, a quick word from our friends at CEX.
Here's a challenge for you. Think of one piece of tech you've got at home that you haven't used in the last year.
Yeah, now imagine swapping it for something that you'll actually use probably every day.
I've got some tech that I haven't used in 40 years, but I get the logic. Because, of course, that's exactly what CEX is all about. They buy thousands of different gadgets, from phones and tablets to cameras, consoles and laptops.
And because they sell professionally tested pre-owned tech, you can often upgrade for a lot less than buying brand new.
And, of course, everything comes with a 5-year warranty.
Head to webuy.com and see what your forgotten gadgets could become. Right, Jace, let's dive into our first iPhone clip. This one takes us all the way back to 2007, before the very first iPhone had gone on sale here in the UK. We managed to get our hands on one early, and we put it head-to-head with arguably the biggest smartphone of the time, Nokia's, I had one of these, mighty N95. Now, on paper, the Nokia had almost everything. Fantastic camera, GPS, expandable storage, proper multitasking, and a physical keyboard. The iPhone, on the other hand, was taking a massive gamble by replacing all of those buttons with a single touchscreen. So, how do you test which keyboard is easier to use? I mean, I know it's obvious, just stay with us. Well, if you're the Gadget Show, then you fly to Barcelona, you ask people to send a text message while you're jumping off a bridge, because obviously that is the most obvious and sensible way to do it. I was terrified.
Me too.
Take a look.
This is all about testing just how simple these phones are to use, how intuitive or fiddly the interface is. With the adrenaline still pumping seconds after the jump, this will be the perfect test of the phone's most important function.
It's the ultimate wedgie, this, isn't it? Yeah?
While Jason joked around, I stood on the opposite side of the bridge.
I'm really scared.
Utterly, utterly terrified.
Come on. Stop being stupid.
As the big moment approached, we were told to climb out over the railings.
It's terrifying.
Look at me. You all right?
No.
We would both jump at exactly the same time from opposite sides of the bridge. Then the race would be on to call, text, and get back onto the ground.
3, 2, 1, go!
We'd jumped, the race to win the challenge was on. I went for the text first.
Oh, God, I feel sick. God, I'm shaking.
And despite suddenly having 10 thumbs, the Nokia's familiar keys meant that I was in text mode and typing in a matter of seconds.
Okay. 7-7.
I went for the call first, and to the iPhone's credit, its touchscreen display worked like a dream. In phone mode, all the numbers are big enough on the screen so that no matter how much I was shaking, I couldn't fail to dial correctly.
It's ringing.
Hello, please let me down. Bye.
As I moved on to my text,
I was still putting the finishing touches to my text.
Please let me down.
But in this extreme environment, the iPhone's text keyboard was proving very tricky.
Oh no, it's all gone all the wrong way. We'll start again. Oh.
At this point, the traditional keys on the N95 again came into their own, proving really easy to operate, and my call went straight through to Christian at the top of my rope.
Let me down, please! Let me down, please!
Let it down.
And I'd won the challenge, finishing a full 30 seconds ahead of Jason.
Marie, come and join me!
Woohoo!
I still can't believe that we thought that was a sensible way to test a phone.
I'm still scarred by it, actually. And I remember the night before, I was so nervous because I only did it because they said you were doing it and vice versa. We found out subsequently.
They said that you were doing it. That's why I did it.
I know. And we were so competitive with each other. I smoked a packet of cigarettes. I don't smoke. I smoked a whole packet of cigarettes and I drank a bottle of wine and I was absolutely hammered.
What?
And I was so... and I was nearly crying in fear when we did that. And we had to do it twice because they missed my shot the first time.
Yeah, but I don't think they did miss it. They just made us do it twice for cutaways and stuff because that's the dastardly way that they were. Looking back, obviously, you know, it's fascinating because in that challenge, the Nokia N95 actually came out on top. I loved the N95. I thought it was great.
I had it for a long time and I was sort of slow to move really to the iPhone. But of course it was the apps that changed everything, wasn't it?
Well, it was. But the physical keys of N95, you know, at that time felt so necessary. I mean, remember the BlackBerry in the same way? Like we were just used to pressing physical keys and it took a while for Johnny Ive, the designer of the iPhone, Apple, to convert the world. Because, of course, they wouldn't just convert people to their phone. Ultimately, the likes of Samsung, Nokia would all go, well, even BlackBerry would all go that way towards a touchscreen.
And just back to the challenge, I can't believe that I took the challenge seriously because obviously I was going to win. You know, because when you've jumped off a bridge, the adrenaline is... Our hands, we were like this naturally with adrenaline because that's what happens to you. And then just trying to text anything. You know, you were never going to get through with your touchscreen, were you? It was always going to be the physical buttons that worked. And yet we took it so seriously. But I think, you know what it was? A brilliant reminder, this is actually, of just how controversial the iPhone was when it first arrived. It's easy to skip past it now because obviously typing on a touchscreen is completely natural. But back then, you know, lots of people were actually saying it'll never catch on. You need buttons.
And again, from a data point of view, it wasn't until the next year when they launched the iPhone 3G that you got the kind of data experience that we now associate with modern smartphones in terms of being able to connect to cloud-based assets and so on. And even apps were very, very few and far between, anything truly useful. So slower start than many people remember for the iPhone.
And yet, obviously within a few years, all manufacturers had followed suit with the touchscreen, hadn't they, and changed from their physical buttons, which just goes to show that, you know, first impressions don't always tell the whole story. The Nokia N95 may have won our challenge, but history tells a very different story about which phone went on to change the world. Nobody these days, you know, unless you are age, you've probably never heard of a Nokia N95. Just a year later, they were back with the iPhone 3G, the second generation iPhone, and the device that really, that was the one, wasn't it, that took iPhone into the mainstream, and the queues were even bigger this time. This was starting a movement, it was starting a thing. Thousands of people camped outside, desperate they were to get their hands on and be the first ones to get their hands on it. Of course, the gadget show was there too. Jason joined the launch day crowds.
I remember
before,
this one.
Yeah, before taking the iPhone 3G.
Tuck and roll.
I'm
sure I tuck and roll underneath the door.
You do.
Anyway,
into the heart of Canary Wharf to see whether it would really compete as a serious business phone against one of the best smartphones of the day, the Nokia E71. Let's see if there's a tuck and roll.
5 to 8 in the morning, 5 minutes to go to the launch of the iPhone 3G. And because I'm first in, I might just get one.
I was in one of hundreds of queues across the country, and people had been waiting nearly 4 hours. So, as the shutters went up, I was pretty excited.
Hi. Hello. 16 gig, please.
Yeah, it's right here.
Oh, thank you, sir. Love you, man. It's so emotional. Oh, can you feel the pressure building? And then the release. Oh, I like it, I like it. The curve works, the curve works.
So, the looks are better than ever, but I needed to find out whether its improvements were more than skin deep. To discover its business appeal, I was joined in Canary Wharf by John, who brought along one of the iPhone's chief rivals.
The Nokia E71 has some serious business tools. Full built-in keyboard, email and office software and integrated GPS. So we're going to put it up against the iPhone in 3 tests. First up, it's email, the cornerstone of any business phone.
If I find the email setup,
yeah.
Add new account,
Will you get that? You know,
typical of Apple.
Very graphic.
Icon-based, absolutely.
Yeah. And this was surprisingly easy to set up, too. Not as charmingly graphic as that, but at the same time, it was still easy.
OK, let's send each other an email.
Yeah. What am I saying? What
Hi, it's me. Something like that.
OK.
OK, ready? Go.
We spent a while testing out the email systems on both devices. The new iPhone now supports push email, allowing you to receive mail as soon as it's sent, while the E71 checks every few minutes for new mail. In our test, the speeds were pretty similar, though we both agreed the QWERTY keyboard on the Nokia was slightly easier to use.
I remember that! I remember it! I remember that Mac! I was wearing a Mac, like Inspector Gadget, wasn't I? I remember
you
buying
were wearing
that
a Mac,
Mac,
and John was wearing a Kegel. But can I just say,
yeah,
OG unboxer.
Yeah, thank you.
Eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Unboxing,
you see, it started here.
That was the best ever.
Yeah, we started it, babes. We started it.
God, it was such a thing, wasn't it? I think what's interesting as well is we were still comparing it against Nokia, because at the time Nokia was the company to beat. If you were buying a serious smartphone in 2008, the E71, it was right at the top, wasn't it?
But even then, John and I both agreed that the keyboard, the QWERTY keyboard on the N71 was better, even then. So it seems from the memories that this evokes and the clear evidence on screen from these clips that the iPhone didn't nail its interface initially for the first couple of phones, that it was a slower build. And that's very interesting. Now you just wouldn't buy one with keys on it, would you? You just wouldn't bother.
No. But, that, you know, that longer burn, that slow burn, they were building an entire ecosystem, weren't they? Everything was going to be better. Web browsing, intuitive interface.
Well, the fact that you've got a massive screen and you... Netflix, for example. Oh, you couldn't have that on an N71, could you? Or the Sony Ericssons of the time, you know, or the Blackberries. You needed that full screen and therefore no keys, you know. Of course, the Nokia Communicator, that had the big screen and a fuller keyboard. I loved that one. Do you remember that
one? I had one of those, yeah. I loved it.
I thought you did.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I was obsessed with Nokia at the time. But, you know, what Apple did was just make your phone into whatever you wanted it to be. That's what they were doing. Looking back, it was a real turning point, wasn't it? The first iPhone showed us what could be possible, even though, like you said, it could be a little bit glitchy, predictive text not very good, and things like that. But the iPhone 3G, I think, was the one that convinced millions of people to make the switch from Nokia.
Yeah.
I did. You know, I moved from my... And I was obsessed with Nokia. I loved it. I genuinely, genuinely loved it.
It was the start of, the business model that has served them so well and made them the most cash rich company on earth, which is this idea of a full ecosystem. If you remember, we all started to use MacBooks, didn't we, privately, because you and I and John and
Otis Sony Vaio fans.
We were Sony Vaio, but we all switched to MacBooks, and it was partly because as you navigated towards that iPhone, as you started to use an iPhone, the argument for getting other Apple devices became much more compelling, because you could complete the ecosystem. iPhones have never been great talking to Windows computers, and even now it's a bit of a faff. And so basically they were very clever, and that they used the iPhone as a kind of foot mat, a welcome foot mat to the rest of their hardware. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But great to be able to just revisit it. Okay, Susie, we're going to make one of our Patreon supporters day, month, maybe even year, because we're giving away £5,000 to spend at CEX.
That's right. After our previous winner, Richard Wykes, won big last series, we're giving another lucky supporter the chance to completely transform their tech collection.
So whether you're saving up for something special, planning the ultimate gaming setup, upgrading your entertainment, or replacing aging tech around the house, £5,000 at CEX gives you a lot of money to think about.
And thanks to our friends at T3, the winner will also receive a one-year subscription to the T3 magazine.
To be in with a chance of winning, simply become a Patreon supporter, and depending on your membership tier, you'll automatically receive one, three or five entries into our prize draw.
Every Patreon supporter also gets ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, exclusive bonus content, and access to our brilliant community of fellow gadget lovers.
And of course, if you join at the max tier, you'll also unlock the entire Gadget Show archive. That's nearly 20 years of gadget reviews, epic challenges, iconic moments, behind the scenes extras, and thousands of pieces of tech that have shaped the Gadget Show and our lives over the years. Head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to join, and you'll find all the competition details along with the full terms and conditions in the episode description.
Yep, good luck. Yeah, every manufacturer suddenly found themselves chasing Apple, didn't they? And just two years later, it unveiled the iPhone 4, a phone that many people still regard as one of the most important smartphones ever made. It introduced the stunning Retina display, an all-new glass and steel design, and of course, FaceTime. But by 2010, the smartphone landscape had changed dramatically. Apple were no longer the underdog. Every major manufacturer was now trying to beat the iPhone, and the competition had become seriously fierce. This time, John Bentley was putting the iPhone 4 through its paces with a little bit of help from presenter Dave Vitti, better known to millions as Comedy Dave. Let's see how it stacked up.
Dave!
How are you?
We met up outside Apple's flagship store in London just after the launch of the iPhone 4, and it became clear that owning its predecessor, the 3GS, had had a profound effect on Dave.
I'm firmly in the iPhone camp now. Everybody said to me, they said, if you get an iPhone, it will completely change the way you think, and you'll never be able to live without it. And I now can't imagine ever having a normal phone again, as it were. I use it for everything.
Dave was really excited to see the new iPhone.
Wow, so this is it. It looks very nice.
But would he think that its better camera, upgraded operating software and new design had improved on his 3GS enough to cement its position as king of smartphones and get his seal of approval?
What we're going to do is pitch that iPhone 4 you're holding against some of its rivals in a series of head-to-head challenges I've devised.
John, I'm ready for the challenge.
First up was usability, and I'd be taking on Dave with the HTC Desire, one of the most user-friendly and versatile rivals to the iPhone 4.
Here's the challenge. What we've got to do is use the internet on our phones to find out an unusual fact about each other, and the winner is going to be the first person to post it on Twitter.
You're on. Ready, steady, go.
Yep.
We both hit the internet button on our phone's homepages, then began to search for one another.
I only know you as Comedy Dave. What's your full name? Proper spelling.
I couldn't tell you that, John.
Dave's iPhone is the quickest to date, thanks to its speedy A4 processor, the same one used in the iPad. Plus, your visual experience is enhanced by a 960 by 640 resolution screen.
It says here that you went to Oxford. In fact, you went to Oriel College.
Oxford. Yes. Is that tweet worthy?
Well, I suppose so. I went to college in Warrington, which isn't really worthy of anything.
My Desire's on-screen keyboard was slightly less responsive, but soon I had my fact on Dave.
You were born in Hong Kong.
This is very true. Made in Hong Kong, as I used to joke that it said on my bum.
The race was now on to post our facts to Twitter. And as the iPhone's new iOS 4 operating software allows multitasking, Dave double-tapped the home button to find his Twitter app in no time.
I, Mr. Bentley, am nearly there.
Sadly, it took me slightly longer to access Twitter through the Desire's built-in messaging service, FriendStream, enabling Dave to snatch victory.
That's amazing. First of all, Comedy Dave, he's genuinely funny. What a cool guy.
He's producer now. I cross paths with him time to time. With
is he? I like his style.
He produces a really successful podcast. He's great.
This is the point where the conversation, you know, around smartphones, Susie, really changes, you know. So with the original iPhone, everyone was asking, can Apple really take on Nokia?
Yeah.
By the time the iPhone 4 rolled around, the question had become, can anyone catch Apple?
Yeah, exactly. And remember, the HTC Desire was a fantastic phone. Android was really starting to come into its own. So for the first time, there was genuine competition. It wasn't just Nokia anymore.
What strikes me watching that back is how many things we now take for granted. You know, multitasking, fast web browsing, Twitter apps. I mean, on the HTC, there was some convoluted way of tweeting for John. And of course, powerful processors shared with other hardware, in that case, the iPad, you know. These were headline features back then. And the iPhone 4 itself was a huge leap forward. That Retina display, I didn't realise it was an iPhone 4 thing, you know. And that design with the sharp edge for a time, that was That was, you know, iconic, beautifully crafted with the aluminium and that. So cool.
I mean, oh God, I'm just thinking about what's going to come out actually in September with the glass and the smooth, and it's evolving still, isn't it? But
yeah.
they really did raise the bar back then. After the iPhone 4 launched, every manufacturer had to rethink not just what their phones could do, but what they looked like as well, which seems a bit stupid to say, but how they looked and how they felt as well, because it was the feel, wasn't it?
And you can trace the those design... Yeah, the roots back to the iPhone 4. It wasn't just another update, was it? It was the phone that cemented the iPhone as the benchmark that everyone else ended up chasing after.
Yeah, it wasn't all plain sailing, though, for Apple. Just 2 years later came the iPhone 5, and for the first time, people started asking whether Apple was losing its spark a little bit. The changes felt more evolutionary rather than revolutionary. The screen was a little bit bigger. It was thinner, lighter, faster, but that kind of wow factor had started to fade. And, Jace, I remember, if I remember rightly, you weren't convinced then. Back in 2012, you and Polly took a close look at the iPhone 5 and you had some very strong opinions about whether Apple was still leading the pack or simply playing it safe. Let's have a look back and see what you made of it.
But the iPhone stood out for all the wrong reasons.
Out of all the three cameras, all the three videos, this one has the most bland of colouring. When I look at the photographs, they just don't stand out. I don't feel like there's any real life in the pictures.
The iPhone, for me, is kind of doing what the iPhone 4 did, in fact, what the iPhone 3 did.
Yeah.
It's just doing it slightly quicker. Real story, I think, is how bad the iPhone 5's battery is.
That doesn't even begin to cover it.
Battery's dead by 3 p.m.
That means you have to carry your charger around.
Unbelievable.
How much of a hassle. iPhone, where do I even start with that? Absolute nightmare. Every single, and I mean every single phone call that I made with that, I have issues with the other person on the other end going, are you still there? Sounds like I'm doing that with my phone.
Really?
Every single person I speak to have said that.
It's quite a statement.
Every phone call.
So, time for our crucial G ratings. The iPhone 5 gets just 3 Gs. No innovation. The battery life is terrible. It's too expensive and the build quality is poor.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think what we were touching on there is something that is very much a modern, contemporary narrative around Apple. And it's partly why they've been pushed to finally realise their predictions and their promises around Apple Intelligence, right? Mm. And to finally capitulate and give us a new form factor, a new device, you know, in the shape of what we hope will be the foldable screens, because they are very much guilty of tiny iterations in recent years. And if you ignore things, if you ignore other hardware, just focus purely on the phone, really, the reasons to buy a new iPhone have become less compelling over the last sort of 5 years. That's not the case this September, if indeed they do release what you've been predicting, Susie.
I think, you know, the core quality of that wasn't great. And
that's another thing that we talk about now. Being able to make a phone call has become, certainly for me, I don't know if it's a Cornwall thing, but it's very unreliable, honestly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So which is what a phone is meant to be for. Yeah, I think they set the bar really high, didn't they? You know, prior to that. And you have this expectation that you're going to get that wow factor each time. And that didn't happen with the iPhone 5. It wasn't anywhere near a disaster at all, but
no.
it didn't reach the heady heights that we were looking for, I suppose, really. But I think if there's one thing this trip through the archives is teaching us, it's that, you know, the first impressions don't always end up matching history. If you move forward again 2 years to 2014, the iPhone 6 was Apple's biggest redesign since the iPhone 4. It had a larger display, a slimmer body and a whole new look. But was it still king of the smartphones? Well, instead of our usual review, we decided to put it on trial. John Bentley hosted a live debate in front of an audience with Jason arguing for the brilliant HTC One M8, while trusted reviews editor Evan Kiprios defended the iPhone 6. Let's see who won.
Our next test was ease of use.
So, stand by. The phone I am championing.
And I'd prepared a long piece of text for Evan and Jason to email to a member of the audience to test some of the phone's most used features, keyboards and the predictive text function. After some furious typing in our admittedly rather unscientific test, we had a clear winner. As Evan's email got through first.
Well, it does start off with the phone I am championing.
Yeah, but I was just being with it.
You've been with it. The phone I am championing is categorically unparalleled, and it goes on.
So, another victory for the iPhone. The next subject was one that's been an Achilles heel for the iPhone, battery life. And when we played continuous full HD video on both phones, the HTC did in fact last around 3 hours longer.
You better concede this one, otherwise there's going to be a smackdown.
I agree that the HTC One M8 has a better battery. It lasts longer.
Yeah, M8 has something called extreme power saving, which is really cool. With extreme power saving on, you can receive texts, emails and calls, OK? And you'll get... 14 days use out of the phone, off one charge.
And for that reason, the HTC One M8 easily wins the battle of the batteries.
14 days. 14
Amazing.
Days!
Yeah, I remember that being a thing with iPhones, the battery life again. Because they were just trying to innovate so quickly around so many new functions that all required energy. And then, you know, it's only recently that they've started. I mean, even now, I think, you know, I've had several iPhones where I've had to replace the battery.
Yeah,
have you?
Yeah.
So it is a thing,
it's
because
a thing.
Over time their performance also wasn't great. But yeah, maybe that's a subjective thing. But by 2014, you know, Android had properly come of age, and phones like that HTC One M8 proved that Apple, you know, weren't the only company capable of making a standout, beautifully designed, premium smartphone. I loved that phone. The metal body was beautiful. I had a couple of them. Front-facing stereo speakers, which were miles ahead of anything else that I'd experienced. And, of course, that battery life. At the time, I genuinely thought HTC had built the better all-round device. I think that's a fair way.
And it was interesting to see you arguing for HTC, not for Apple, isn't it? You made some really, really good arguments for HTC there, and yet the audience still leaned towards the iPhone.
Yeah, and it's very seductive. You know, it's always been very seductive, the iPhone. They were buying into the whole experience. You know, the hardware, the software, the App Store, iMessage, FaceTime, which were all still relatively novel. Not that novel, but for mainstream consumers, you know, it just works together. It's that ecosystem thing that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
But the HTC One deserves to be mentioned, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they sort of faded away, didn't they? And Samsung became the company that stepped up to challenge the iPhone, ultimately. It's fascinating to look back, because this was probably the closest that the smartphone race maybe had ever been. There wasn't an obvious winner anymore, was there? It really came down to being a subjective choice and what mattered to you at this stage.
Now, it's much less close, right? Mm. And it's going to be really interesting, because it's not just Apple that are innovating massively and, you know, moving forward in a really exciting way with a brand new form factor come September, if the rumours are true. But also, as you'll know from this very podcast, because we announced it here, Samsung are doing the same thing. Was it Honor? You've got the Honor, haven't you?
Yep.
You're going to be playing with that.
Yep.
We could see actually a bit of a battle in the next 12 months. You know, it's quite a challenge, isn't it? Because one of them could end up being the leader, and it might not be Apple. It just depends on the price point and the feature set. Sometimes it can be a couple or one, perhaps, really innovative app that uses the hardware in a unique way that people just want. And some celebrities use it, some Hollywood stars. It's the right thing at the right time. And actually, the lineup up front, the grid, you know, can change, to use a Suzy motor racing analogy.
I'm pretty sure that the iPhone podium is going to be painful.
I meant the podium, sorry. The end bit, not the start bit.
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
I just think the price point's going to be horrible. And, you know, the want and the lust is going to be there, but the price point's going to be painful. But, you know, looking back at that piece, it feels like that was, when you talked about the ecosystem, that is really where that kind of started to flourish. And that was the moment where the modern smartphone era started, wasn't it? If we jump forward now to 2017 Apple was celebrating the iPhone's 10th anniversary with what it hoped would be its biggest leap forward since the original. The iPhone X introduced the edge-to-edge OLED display, waved goodbye to the home button and Touch ID, and brought us Face ID, a feature that at the time seemed like something straight out of science fiction. By now, the Gadget Show had a fresh new look with Craig Charles joining the team, but there was one familiar face putting Apple's latest creation through its paces. Otis Dealey, the O-Dog. And looking back, it's fascinating to see everybody's first reactions to features that have since become completely normal.
How much?
$999 for the 64 gig. And if you want the 256 gig, that's going to set you back £1,149.
Well, like most Apple products, part of the beauty is the packaging, so let's get going.
It certainly is. I mean, for starters, just feel that. It's not just an image.
No, it's embossed.
There you go, it's embossed, OK? So don't throw away the box. It's worth something. So here we go. Look at that, look. Yeah. Even the way you take the cellophane off, man! It's all really nice.
OK, that was so smooth,
that,
wasn't
that
it?
Comes up. Look, everything just beautifully smooth. Mm. Of course, we know it's designed by Apple in California.
Oh, look at that. What there colours do they come in, by
okay,
the way?
OK, they come in space grey or silver.
Hey, look at that full-size screen.
Look at that. Oh. So, edge-to-edge screen, all glass composition there. Very nice. Wireless charging. Okay, right, yeah, take the... Look, all right, over the top. So, perhaps the most talked about feature is Face ID. There's no home button on here, you see, so you unlock it either by swiping up and putting in a number.
And you turn it on with your face. Now, what about if it's dark?
So it uses infrared. Okay. 30,000 infrared dots placed all over your face so that it can build up your unique contours and face profiles.
Okay, but what if I took a photograph of my face and used the camera on a photograph of my face? Would that work?
Okay, so again, because of the unique way those 30,000 dots sit across your face, using a true depth camera, you won't be able to fool it using a flat image.
The iPhone X was Apple saying, you know, this is what the next era of the iPhone's going to look like. Up until then, every iPhone still carried a lot of DNA from the original. You know, there was always a home button, thick bezels, some basic layout, but the iPhone X just ripped up that rule book.
Yeah, and it was quite brave, really, because, you know, not everybody loved it at first. People complained about the notch. They missed the home button because people don't really like change. And plenty thought that £999 for a phone was simply too expensive. Oh, for that now.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's going to be double that come September. Anyway.
Double, and then some, I think.
That's what happens with Apple. They, you know, they make a bold decision. Everyone debates it for 6 months and then the rest of the industry follows. You know, whether it was the edge-to-edge display, which was gorgeous on the iPhone X, gesture navigation, or as you said, you know, Face ID. That phone, the iPhone X, influenced almost every premium smartphone that has come after it. You know, and it does make you wonder with the foldable whether that's going to do the same. But there's no guarantees. They've got good form. You would be, sensible to bet on them. Metaphorically speaking, of course, but stranger things have happened, you know.
Stranger things
have happened, and there's lots of other great devices, vying for best foldable come 2026, 2027.
Well, I mean, if history has taught us anything, it's when Apple makes a major design shift, the others tend to, you know, be looking out for it and paying close attention. It will be really interesting to see if this foldable is going to redefine Apple and the future of Apple.
But we'll be here for it. We'll be here, won't we, Susie?
I am so here for it. I won't be able to afford one, but I'll be loving it.
To sell one of the kids.
Absolutely. We've loved that. I've loved digging through
the
archives.
It's been great.
Yeah. There are over 35 series to choose from, so we've only just scratched the surface, really.
So what would you like, listeners and viewers of the Gadget Show podcast? You tell us what you'd like. You know, more predictions, old reviews, the times when we got it spectacularly right, maybe the times when we got it spectacularly wrong.
Did we ever? Or maybe all the times that we ended up in hospital. That's an hour show right there. Let us know in the comments below. And who knows, it could be the focus of our next archive special. That's all we've got time for on this week's Gadget Show podcast.
A huge thank you, as always, to our Patreon supporters. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see your names on the screen right now. Your support helps us restore more of the Gadget Show archive, make more podcasts, and create brand new videos every single week.
And if you'd like to join them, you'll get ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, exclusive bonus content, access to our community, the complete Gadget Show archive, and you'll automatically be entered into our £5,000 CEX shopping spree giveaway.
Wow! To find out more, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow.
And if you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts or hit that follow button on YouTube so you never miss an episode.
Okay, so important news, the podcast is taking a short summer break, but we will be back for more episodes in a few weeks' time.
So until then, enjoy this incredible summer and we'll see you very soon. Take care.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.